America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It seems as though Drake May is progressing pretty quickly through this concussion protocol. Any word on if they expect him to play this weekend? Do you expect him to play this weekend?
Just based upon, Christian, the way he's trending, I would kind of expect him to play, using Brock Purdy, who suffered a concussion earlier this year, kind of as a guide. He sustained it on a Monday night, and I think he was ready to go on a Sunday, having been cleared on a Saturday. So while May might not be able to take part in all the live reps, say today, and tomorrow's kind of a different day usually around the NFL for teams who are preparing for Sundays. It's more of a special teams day. But I would, and again, it's not really even in the hands of the team, so you can't ask anybody and say, do you think he's going to play? It would be hypothesizing because you don't know how he's going to feel. But based upon the trending, I would say more likely than not that he would play, but don't hold me to that.
Welcome into an abbreviated Halloween edition of the Night Show here on WEEI. We're taking you up till Thursday night football coverage at 7:30. I'm John Lyons alongside Chris Scheim.
Hello.
How are you, Scheim?
Good. How you doing, buddy?
And we got the big dog, second best JB in Boston, Joe Braverman, behind the glass. Joe, how are you?
I thought we demoted him to third best JB.
Well, we were on the edge of that. Did we find?
We couldn't find a number two.
Oh, that's right.
Why.
We couldn't find another two. All right. I'll have to get on that.
There may be some searching going on right now.
Yeah, I'll get the research team.
Who knows?
On that.
Maybe Javon Baker will catch a touchdown pass this week.
Oh, there you go.
So you got a little competition.
You got to stay on your toes there, Braverman.
Oh, no. A guy who's only played in one game since being drafted.
Hey, I'm just telling you. He's coming.
Jacoby Brissett also could take your spot.
Actually,
I think yeah, about Allen.
After that game-winning drive. So the third best JB in Boston, Joe Braverman, here with us. And that was Tom E. Curran talking about Drake May and his possibility to play this weekend. And Scheim, you and I were just talking off the air. This has kind of gone back and forth a little, where he goes out Sunday. Gerard Mayo tells us at halftime he's going to be out. He is obviously out the rest of that game. There's limited participation in practice. Schefter says that maybe he's not leaning towards playing, but now Curran and others are saying, well, maybe it looks like he's playing. He practiced again today. It feels to me, Scheim, like he's trending towards playing.
Yeah, I would hope that's the case. I expected him to play. I felt like nobody ever outright came out and said he had a concussion either. It was just like concussion-like symptoms. And so, but because you were pulled by the independent spotter, I assume you have to go through the protocol in order to rebound and like come back. So like, I felt like he could have probably played in the second half of that Sunday game. If it was a playoff game scenario, like Drake May was probably playing in that game. Like, the NFL's not going to be like, yeah, you need to sit out. Like, he would have been fine. And so, in my opinion, as soon as he was cleared by an independent doctor, which is the final step of their whole concussion protocol crap, he was going to play. And for me, whether that's today, tomorrow, Saturday, or right before kickoff Sunday, if he's cleared by an independent doctor, Drake May will play on Sunday.
And for the injury report today, he was listed as a limited participant.
Yep.
He was listed with a concussion on the injury report today, at least. So going through the protocol, as you mentioned, it feels like he's progressed pretty rapidly through this protocol. And
yeah,
look, not that we're medical experts, but for a concussion that hit he took, It didn't look like, you know, the most severe. It wasn't a Tua-level concussion. Wasn't the most severe.
It wasn't even like a Josh Allen-level hit.
And I think this is an interesting point for May. Like, you look at his young career, these milestones and things. Well, how do you handle the first time you come back from an injury or the first time you have some adversity? Because I think, look, you look at his first few starts, Houston, he had some great moments, the booty touchdown. He had some bad moments, too. Jacksonville, he was a little bit cleaner, but you still lost by two touchdowns. Then he comes out early in that Jets game.
They were going to throttle the Jets.
He looked awesome. I mean, that throw to Tyquan Thornton that Thornton dropped because he doesn't...
Even the booty throw. Like, it was a tough throw because it was over the middle of the field, but it hit booty right in the arms.
Yeah.
The guy was trying to, you know, alligator arm it, corral it, and pin it to his body instead of going with his hands, which is a bummer. But he should have been 5 of 6 leaving that game instead of 3 of 6.
It'd be amazing what the Patriots receivers would do if they would catch with their hands and not with their shoulders, chests, or just the bottom of their palms.
Novel idea for a receiver. I feel like that's asking a lot. Yeah,
what do I know about receiver play?
Nothing.
But when it comes to May and himself, like, so in that game, he looks really good, right? He has the rushing touchdown. And I felt like, too, his rushes, especially on that touchdown drive, or at the right time. And what I mean by that is, and we see this a lot with young quarterbacks, anytime there's pressure, oh my God, I got to run. Whereas with May on that first drive, it was, okay, the Jets are rushing too far upfield. This is a wide open lane for a first down. Yep. I'll take it. And then, of course, for the touchdown later, I'll take it. And even the play he got injured on, I think, was kind of one of those plays. Like, hey, the lane's open. I can get an easy first down. And a lot of these Patriots receivers are not getting open, right?
No.
So guys are covered.
And they're not catching the football when they are getting open.
The only thing I would say that I don't even know if I want to qualify it as far as a concern, but something they should maybe get a good handle on is, at that point, at the time he got injured, what was that, his fourth scramble already in two series? Like, that's on pace for too many. So I think they have to find a little bit more of a balance. And again, if the Jets are rushing way too far upfield and giving it to you, I get it. I just don't want that, you know, 2, 3, 4 scrambles every series going forward, or 5 scrambles a quarter going forward. So it's just, again, something to kind of monitor against a Tennessee team that has, and we'll get into this later, really weird defensive numbers.
Yeah, and so when you talk about the scrambles, like, I think it was fine. I'm not upset with the number. I don't think you're getting into the too many category, because I think what it does is it forces the Jets to respect it later, right? In the second half, they're probably not going to be nearly as many scrambles, because now the Jets are going to throw a spy at you, or they're going to do something to change it up, play more zone, whatever it is, so that they have their eyes on the quarterback more frequently. But that'll free things up in the back end as well and allow Drake May to make some throws that probably wouldn't have been there if he hadn't done that prior. So I think, like, in my head, all that stuff kind of sets itself up, and I'm not too worried about the scramble number, especially when Alex Van Pelt refuses to run a designed run for him ever.
Which is fine with me, to be clear. Unless it's
near the goal line
or if it's a key, like, gotta have it fourth down, I'm okay with it. I don't want him running a lot of design runs, especially now.
But like 3 or 4 a game, I think is fine. Like, it's, but they haven't done a single one, and it's infuriating because this is a kid who had 1,000 yards rushing in college and 16 touchdowns. Like, as you saw on Sunday before he came out of that game, kid can scoot.
I like his scheme. There's been moments when he's shown to be a good play caller.
Shut up, Orlovsky. God, Alex Van Pelt's scheme stinks. Anyways, I didn't see the scrambling as an issue. But, like, the other thing I noticed, too, when you watch Drake, there's that moment of hesitation before he actually takes off, which I think is good, because it doesn't mean that his first instinct is to just run.
Yeah.
He still wants to look downfield. He still wants to look for the open receiver. He still wants to look for those progressions. But he's also, like, making that decision in his head, like, I'm not going to give up free yards. Like, if I can get a free 10 yards, we're moving the chains. That's a great play. Let's just do that.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a positive moment for him when it comes to the scrambling as well.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was getting at, is in that a lot of young quarterbacks are just like, I got to get out of here, right?
It's more of a panic than it is a decision.
And I think if you're a Patriots fan, the model you should look at, obviously we all want Drake May to be a great quarterback and to have a great career. The model you should really look at is Burrow and Mahomes, not Allen and Jackson. Because, first of all, he's not as thick as Josh Allen. He's not as fast as Lamar Jackson. And I think he has the potential to be a really great passer. And if you look at Burrow and Mahomes, they run, but it's generally, hey, it's 3rd and 7, everyone's covered, I'm going to take off and get 12 yards, and now the defense is kind of like, oh, crap, they have to respect it at least a little bit. Now you can start picking them apart all over the place. It's, I guess, a complement to a great passing game. It's not, like, again, the Ravens are unique because it's Lamar, but it's, we're going to build our offense around this guy will throw and run, or Josh Allen, this guy will throw and run. I think the model you want to look at is the Burrow-Mahomes type model.
Yeah, I would even say like split the difference between the two, right? To me, Burrow is very park and bark. Like he's going to sit in the pocket. Scrambling is a very, very last resort. Whereas Mahomes welcomes it. Like if the pocket breaks down, he wants to get out. He wants to get to the sideline because he knows he can draw a flag or make a throw or make a run and get a couple yards. And so I want there to be more of a kind of split the difference there. And I would actually lean more towards Josh Allen than even those guys. Maybe not full on. Like, I don't want the physical running nature that Josh Allen has. I don't want to see you running and trying to run over linebackers. Like, please don't do that. We don't need that.
But get handled when it gets handled.
But like, you watch Justin Herbert in his last game this past weekend against I forget who the Chargers played
Saints.
This weekend. Saints, thank you. He had like a 35-yard run. I'm like, ooh, like that's good. Like do what Justin Herbert does, right, where you're athletic enough to make plays constantly. Like Justin Herbert has a couple.
But 70... we think of him as a passer.
Yes.
But he does those things and you're like, that's a huge moment, or yep, that's a huge first down or huge play. I think that is the model to look at.
When the moment calls for it, run, because you can. You know, Herbert has a couple like 70-yard rush games. That's fine, but don't make it an every week occurrence.
Yeah, and I would agree with that, right? I think that's the model to look at, that Burrow, Mahomes, you want to add in Herbert to, like, hey, it's a big moment when you run, but we're not doing, 12 design runs a game.
Correct.
All this type of stuff. And what's interesting, too, about this weekend, let's say he does play against Tennessee.
I hope he does.
This is, and I mentioned this before, first of all, this is a bad team. Second of all,
so bad.
But weird defensive numbers, right? Like, you know they're number one in the NFL in yards per game defense?
Yeah, like, they're actually pretty good.
But, and number one pass yards per game, but 21st in passer rating. So what that tells me is quarterbacks are being really efficient against them, and then they're getting leads and they're running the ball.
Well, and the other thing, too, is I think that that defense is facing a lot of short fields, right?
Yeah.
It's a lot of turnovers from guys like Will Levis.
Brutal.
And Mason Rudolph, who just stink. And the Titans special teams might be the worst single aspect of a football game amongst any team in the league. Like, I don't know if you watched any of that Lions game. Khalif Raymond was just like having his way in the return game. He had a return touchdown. He had like a million return yards. The Lions had 56 points, and I think Goff had 52 points, and Goff had like 58 passing yards or something stupid like that, because they were just constantly inside the Titans red zone. It didn't matter. Like, it was so easy.
12 for 15, yeah, and 85 yards, yeah, for Jared
85,
Goff.
85 yards, and they
your
scored.
Team didn't even break triple digits.
And the crazy part is 52-14, it didn't even feel that close.
Like, no.
But
like, and the Titans kept it close like through the first quarter.
Yeah.
It was like, I was like, oh man, are the Titans going to make this a game? And then the next thing you know, the Lions have dropped a 50 burger.
And that's another piece to this too, right? I mentioned 21st in passer rating, so you know quarterbacks are being efficient against them. They have some talented guys up front. Like, they drafted Tavondre Sweat. He hasn't quite made his mark yet, at Texas, I loved. If the Patriots
360-pound lineman who can move, and
if the Patriots offense
something about
sucked
big guys in
bad.
The SEC for you, Shine.
I Joe, there is very few things I love more than a big man out of the SEC.
Yeah. If this was a good Patriots team, I would have wanted them to draft him in the first round.
Well,
so
he was
bad.
Like a third-round pick, wasn't he?
Yeah, because him and Byron Young, I think one of them went in the second round, the other went in the third round. But point being, they have him. They have Jeffrey Simmons, who's a really good player. Harold Landry, Boston College guy, who is a good player. But they only have 76 pressures this year, Shime, per PFF. Really low. Your typical team is around 100. A bunch of teams are in the 120s, 130s. And they're sitting there at 76 pressures. And I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, like, if you look at Drake May in this game, and before the season, this is the game I targeted for him to have his first start. Now he comes in, he's got a few games of experience against a defensive line that doesn't create a ton of pressure. They allow quarterbacks to be efficient defensively. Legarius Sneed's on the injury report for them. This could set up, if he's healthy and ready to go, as potentially his best game as a pro so far against this Titans team.
Well, it feels very similar to how I felt him going into that Jets game last week. Like, I felt like the Jets defense was
overrated. And he was on his way to, by the way, his best game, probably.
Yes, exactly.
Before he got hurt.
And that's kind of where I was going, right? He was on his way to having possibly the best game he's had as a pro. So I feel like if he does play Sunday, you're right, he's set up for so much success to really get his first start-to-finish win as a quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, and the Patriots' offensive line, we know, is still terrible near the bottom of the league.
Yeah, but last week they were pretty good. Like, they weren't bad.
I mean, I think they were definitely better last week.
Yeah,
I think, and
they
looked
like a capable offensive line.
Like, we just can't equate better to good, right?
Yeah,
like, but they were better, but they're not good. But this Titans defensive line, I mean, if and it's not the be-all, end-all. I mentioned the pressures. Like, PFF overall has them at 17th. So, yeah. This is not a good defense as a whole. Like, again, Landry's good. Simmons is good. But it's not a great defensive line. It's probably not even a good defensive line.
And they were better when they had Vrabel as their head coach 100%. Because he was scheming things up to help them get pressure.
100%. So this is a spot for me with Drake May that I look at is he can come in. You mentioned get his first start to finish win, but maybe really develop a rhythm with maybe a Kendrick Bourne or guys. Because he seems to have a little...
Or a Kayshon Booty.
And he seems to be starting to develop that rapport with Booty, whereas he had the completion against him against the Jets. He had the long touchdown against the Texans. I think only one catch against Jacksonville, but that game got kind of out of hand and crazy. Yeah. But point being, he's kind of starting to develop that, you could feel like. Maybe there's something there with him and Douglas, but there's still not that deep connection between him and one of the guys. Maybe this is a week where he can really take a step forward in developing.
And I also think that one of the things that could help him this week is this might be an opportunity, too, for the offensive line to get that run game going a little bit. You saw what Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs did to this defense last week. You know, you don't have that, but Ramondre Stevenson's no slouch. So I expect him to have some success, be better than 20 for 48 like he was last week. Like, get out there and establish a good running game, which is going to open up, again, better play action opportunities and more options for Drake May in the long run.
And this offense they're going to face in the Titans, it's unless there's some sort of disaster, which with this Patriots team is possible.
Always could be.
Unless there's a disaster, I mean, this is an offense 30th in yards per game, 31st in pass yards per game, 28th in points per game. So I'd be shocked if you're playing from behind a lot. Like, you should be able to operate your offense just really the way you want to. So that should, again, give more opportunities for May to really get into a rhythm. And you've got to imagine the run game's going to be better, too.
You have to. And Mason Rudolph is going to give you something. He is not going to be perfect throughout the course of 60 minutes. It just won't happen. It's not the kind of quarterback he is. He will give you something at some point, and it's whether the defense can take advantage of it, and it's whether they can stop Tony Pollard, right? Like the Tony Pollard.
Might not even play.
Yeah, that's right.
And the backup Tajay Spears didn't practice either.
Yeah, so you have an opportunity here to really kind of, all right, we get like the third string running back or like a banged up Tajay Spears, who's not even really a great between the tackles runner anyways, and you have an opportunity to limit that and force Mason Rudolph to throw the football, which you can take advantage of, and that's going to set Drake May up with a lot of short fields and a lot of great opportunities.
Yeah, and I know the Patriots team already has two wins, but to me, this is the most winnable game, I think, on their entire schedule. Going into the year so far this year, I mean, this Titans team is not good. But
outside of that last Miami game, but...
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I'll give you that. True. That was especially... Yeah. We got to talk about something coming up. Shime, the Celtics did something last night that they've only done 4 times in the last 6 months.
Ooh, okay.
They lost.
I know.
That's only the 4th time in the last
Crazy.
6 months
they've
lost.
And they almost won.
I know.
That's the weirdest part.
So we got to get into this Celtics team. We still got a lot ahead. We're going to talk about the Bruins. Scoops Keefe had a little nugget about Jim Montgomery and his potential future. Oh, by the way, my Halloween costume, I'm dressing up as a Dodgers fan so I can feel like we won the World Series. We got to talk about Mookie Betts and the Dodgers and the Yankees and how it relates to if the Red Sox will finally light a fire under themselves. We've got all that coming up right after Joe Braverman is trending.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Let me just remind you first that Shimon Lyons is brought to you by Jackson Lumber and Millwork. Now, let's get into trending. The Patriots injury report is out after today's practice as they gear up to head to Nashville against the Titans. Jalen Polk, Marte Mapu, they were full participants after being limited yesterday. Drake May logged a second straight day of limited practice as he continues to recover from a concussion. Christian Ellis, Vidarian Lowe, and Tyquan Thornton were new additions as they were all limited today for Tennessee. As mentioned, both running backs, Tony Pollard and Tajay Spears, were DNPs, and normally starting quarterback Will Levis was limited. Week 9, the NFL gets started tonight with the Texans taking on the Jets. You can listen to Westwood One's coverage of Thursday Night Football right here on 93.7 WEEI-FM beginning at 7:30. The Bruins return to action as they hit the ice down in Carolina against the Hurricanes. Jim Montgomery said pregame he's splitting up the fourth line of Mark Kastlik, who's now on the second, Johnny Beecher on the first, and Cole Koepke on the third. We'll see how all those come to fruition when the puck drops at 7 o'clock. Speaking of Montgomery, John teased it. Our own Rich Keefe said that Bruins head coach is on the hot seat. Scoops Keith said the front office is frustrated with the team's 4-5-1 start and could make the change if things don't get better. And the first Red Sox news of the offseason has come through. Starter Lucas Giolito has officially exercised his $19 million player option for 2025. Giolito missed all of 2024 with an internal brace procedure on his right elbow. Trading Now is brought to you by Time Out Market Boston. Experience the essence of Boston's culinary and cultural scene at Time Out Market Boston, nestled in the Fenway. From live music sessions to food and beverage tastings and everything in between, Time Out Market Boston showcases the best of the city under one roof. I'm Joe Braverman, and that's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Siakam with the ghost screen. Brown switches on to Halliburton. Siakam for the lead. Pacers lead.
Oh, pretty scary ending for the Celtics last night, Sean.
It was a graveyard smash.
It was. I'm John Lyons. That's Chris Sean.
Hello.
And we do need to talk about something that the Celtics did for only the fourth time in the last 6 months. They lost a basketball game.
Shocker.
Down 24. In the game, down 19 in the fourth quarter. They force overtime, a Tatum three with 14 seconds left. Of course, in the overtime period, Siakam hits that game-winning three with 7 seconds left. Jaylen Brown misses a shot to potentially answer. And this was a game that I don't want to use the adjective. It was kind of a weird game because I think it was one of those that if the Celtics are going to lose games as the season goes on, this is kind of the formula of how they're going to lose, right? They only shot 33% from three. It felt like they missed a bunch of layups. They missed 6 free throws. And Indiana treated this like their Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that for the
Celtics, always going to get every team's best at this point.
And exactly, right? So you look at so far this season. Detroit, they're not a good team. You got their best last weekend. Mm-hmm. You got, I guess for a part of the game, you got Washington's best. Mm-hmm. Coming up this weekend, you got back-to-back in Charlotte. You're going to get their best both nights. Now, they're not that talented. You're obviously much better than them, but you are going to get their best. Golden State next Wednesday, which I think Tatum and Brown might score 70 points each in that game.
I can't wait for that game.
But you're going to get their best.
But that may also have no Steph Curry, too. Yeah. So that's going to be a weird one.
Yeah, ticket prices are fluctuating a little bit for that game. We'll kind of keep posted. You know, we'll see. Maybe I'll text Ken and say, like, hey, I can't work next Wednesday.
You look at that game, too, from last night, and it's... I mean, Jaylen Brown was 1 of 11 from 3. Yeah. Jason Tatum, 5 of 18. Like, that was... They just... Especially at overtime, Tatum just kept taking threes. And, I respect it, but at a point... And I think Derek White was doing a good job managing it at first, right? They kept playing that 1-2 game up high very frequently between him and Tatum. And then at one point... White's like, all right, I'm just going to take this to the hoop, and generally good things will happen. And that's exactly what happened. And then, you know, Pritchard gets to the line, and I'm like, okay, good. But then you miss a bunch of threes in overtime. Tatum misses a free throw. Brown misses 2 free throws, which is
those are huge.
The most infuriating, I think that's my most infuriating thing with Jaylen Brown. For a guy who won Finals MVP and Eastern Conference MVP last year, his free throw line game is not as good as you'd want it to be. For a superstar basketball player, it is not nearly as good as it should be, especially a guy that wants to be a shooter. And so that was really frustrating to watch because those 3 points were like the difference of the game. right? If you have those 3 points and Siakam hits the three to tie it, then it's like, okay, it's a tie game. We don't have to worry about them fouling us. We don't have to worry about shooting off the inbounds right away. We can draw up a better play to get points, and you only need two. And so it's just a frustrating way to lose after you did such a good job at somehow finding your way back into that game.
A lot of that was on me. I got to be better for my guys.
Yeah, Jaylen Brown talked about that. That's him after the game last night, and I found it interesting, the fact that the Celtics actually spent the energy to battle back.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that, you think a lot of teams, they win a championship, you know they're the big dog, they bring most of their guys back. On a night, Wednesday night in October, they get down by 20, they're in the middle of a road trip, right? They got more road games coming up. They just kind of, not pack it in, but they're not going full bore to come back. And the Celtics treated that late third and into the mid fourth quarter, and a lot of it credit to their bench, but that was playoff level intensity. And I think part of that, it's maybe because it was Indiana. Oh,
you felt like it was playoff level intensity. Like for me, it felt very casual for the Celtics.
Up until late third quarter, it felt kind of casual. And then it felt they started to climb back in. And again, I think a lot of that was the bench energy.
Yeah.
And Nemus Kata was terrific in this game.
Excellent. But Pritchard's been great all but like the first game of the year.
And I think it is a test. And look, we're talking about a loss here, so we're not trying to totally ball wash.
No.
But it's a testament to, I think, the depth of this team. You can have the bench in, you can have a lineup without Brown, without Tatum, at times without both of them, and you can get back into a game against, I mean, Indiana, maybe the toughest team they're going to play in the East. I mean, I know we've had that discussion
before. Cavs look real good.
Cavs look great,
too. They look real good.
Right, and it's crazy because it was a sweep last year, but three of those four games came down to the wire against Indiana. Like, that's a team that I think is not afraid of you. They are good. They do make some mistakes. Like, the Pacers right now almost feel to me like the Celtics of like 3 years ago, where they would get these big leads and then they kind of screw
young
around.
Upstarts.
And whereas the Celtics, I feel like, have moved past that. Mm. And maybe Oklahoma City will fit into this category. We'll see. But Indiana feels like one of those teams where, hey, there's a lot to like there. There's some youth. There's energy. There's good players. But let's not forget, Mathurin, excuse me, was the sixth overall pick in 2022. So 2 years ago, they were picking in the high lottery.
Yeah, and you're also not going to see a 30-point performance out of Mathurin every time you face the Pacers, which, I mean, if it's only Pascal Siakam scoring 25-plus, like, you're going to be fine. You're going to be able to handle that. And so, unfortunately, Mathurin was hitting them from everywhere last night, and so he was a problem for you off the bench. But you're right. It is impressive to me, and I think this speaks to how talented the Celtics are, is that more than almost three quarters of that game, you're like, nah, it's just another day. Like, we're just going to go out here, shoot around, have some fun. And then it's like, ah, we're down 20. Oh, okay, let's make this a game. And then all of a sudden, it's overtime. I think that's against, like you said, a playoff team. And I think that is remarkable to see. Oh, so this team is unbelievably talented to the point where they can kind of toy with people sometimes.
That's why at the end of the game, you can't be, like, insanely upset that they lost.
No, yeah. I think it's
a Wednesday game. I am impressed with how they battled back.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you still got down by 24.
Yeah.
Like that, and I think part of this, and Indiana season high in rebounds, the 57 last night. Like, that's not great. But, I mean, you missed a ton of shots. 33% from three. I mean, how many layups did they miss in this game? You mentioned the free throws, Sean. I'm like,
brutal.
100% right.
And so many layups too in overtime. I think I can count like four or five off the top of my head.
And it feels like this team, so we're a little over a week into the season. It feels like this team is targeting 63s a game. That's kind of what they're shooting for. They've been hovering around that number of 60.
Yep.
And look, some of it, like opening night against the Knicks, they chucked up some extra ones to try to tie or break that record. So maybe that's a little inflated. But it feels like their target, 55, 60 threes in a game.
Which seems a little inflated, though. Last year, weren't they around like 45?
They were, I don't know off the top of my head. I think they were below 50, though, I think.
Yes.
Think maybe 48, don't quote me. But I guess, is there a line that it's too much, is what my thought process.
I think you might be there.
And I wonder if you're there. And here's the thing about the Celtics. Like, everybody identifies them as, oh, they're going to chuck threes.
42 and a half during the regular 42. Season.
Okay, yeah, so see? Actually even less. Yeah, okay,
yeah.
Less than we
so,
thought.
So, like, you're adding 12 to 18 more a game? That seems a little excessive.
And look, you have Tatum, who's a great shooter, despite the hitch in his game in the playoffs last year. Overall in his career, he's been a great shooter. Derek White's a great shooter. Jrue Holiday's a pretty good shooter. Horford for a big man and Porzingis, they're good shooters for big men.
Yeah, that's another thing to note is that in that end of the stretch in regular and in OT, that Holiday and Horford weren't in. It was Pritchard and Cada.
And Pritchard, really good shooter. And you might have nights like that, too, like you're trying to manage. Because think about who you mentioned. Horford's 38, Holiday's mid-30s.
Yep.
Both Holiday played in the Olympics. Horford played big minutes in the playoffs with the Porzingis injury. So that might be one of those things where you're managing those guys, and that's just the way it has to be. Like, I mentioned Porzingis, 37.5% three-point shooter last year, but on catch-and-shoot threes, 41.6%. Like, that's a really good shooter. Guy, and I know he's out right now, but as he comes back, like, they're going to shoot a lot of threes.
But, I think, like, Jaylen Brown shouldn't be taking 11 of them.
Yeah, that feels like a lot.
And then when he is going to the basket, he shouldn't be 11 of 30.
And the thing about Tatum and Brown, too, is when they go to the basket,
they're so
devastating.
Good. I think the broadcast even talked about it with Tatum last night. Like, he has been so efficient getting to the basket, right? Like, he gets to the basket, and it's either going to be a dunk or a lay-in, or he's going to draw the foul. Yeah. And it's like he's going to go to the line. I mean, he shot 15 free throws last night, and he was still 10 of 25 from the field. Like, it was impressive. And I think, like, that's what I wanted to see more of from Jaylen Brown. In the playoffs last year, to his credit, it was one of the best parts about his game is he was going to the basket, he was being aggressive, but he was also being highly efficient in doing so.
And I think, look, this Celtics team should shoot a lot of threes. They just won a championship shooting a lot of threes. It's a better thing to shoot a bunch of threes. I think what you want is that when, like last night, you're shooting 33%, then you got to hit those layups, which they weren't hitting last night. And I go back to the finals last year. Tatum was not shooting the three ball well at all in the playoffs, including the finals. So game one of the finals, he has 11 rebounds. Game two, he has 12 assists. Game five, he has 11 assists. And he still had two games where he scored 31 points. But all these other pieces, and that's just Tatum, but Brown has all those pieces to his game. Once Zingy comes back, he has all those. Holiday has multiple pieces of his game. So just, we know they can do all these things. I think they just got to be cognizant of, let's find the balance when we need to. I don't mind if they shoot 53s a night, just on a night like last night when they're not falling.
Get to the hoop.
Make sure you're hitting those.
And I think it's imperative on Mazzulla to dictate that, right? Because I think these guys are just, they all have like shooter mentality. It's just kind of it's in their blood at this point. So I think it is imperative for Joe Mazzulla as the head coach to put his foot down and be like, all right, here's the deal. Where it's just not falling right now. Let's get to the hoop. Like, drive the lane, get to the basket, draw some fouls. Like, let's do it the old-fashioned way a little bit. And then find a better balance.
And speaking of Joe Mazzulla, Tom in Hull is on the line here. He wants to talk about Joe Mazzulla. Tom, welcome in. What do you got for us?
I do. Shime, I listen to you in the morning.
Appreciate you, Tom.
On my way to work. You're hysterical. I love the way you handle those guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, but listen, guys, real quick. Joe Mazzulla, when he took over, you know, back in a couple of years ago, and you know, over a tough situation with the other guy, he had these guys, you know, shooting threes, and I was one of those guys going like, you know, come on, take it to the hole. Joe Mazzulla is ahead of his time. He's the best coach in the NBA because it's all about threes. And I finally realized it. I said to myself when they were going for the championship, wow, they're playing Joe Mazzulla ball. He's ahead of it. It's all about the threes. And he was all about the threes when he first, you know, started coaching. Everybody thought like he was a lame duck coach. But the guy is a genius. And I'm telling you right now, the Celtics, if they don't win it again this year, I'll be shocked. They have guys that can bang down the threes. Derek White, I mean, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, everybody. You know, the big guy, the old guy there. I can't think of his name now, but it's like, the Celtics, Joe Mazzulla is a great coach, and he's ahead of his time. And because of that, and he's got all these guys that can bang threes, Celtics are going to win it again this year, no doubt in my mind. All right, guys, have a good night.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks for the call. I would agree.
I think he has a point, too, right? Last year, I believe the Celtics were the only team in the NBA to average more than 43s a game. This year, it's early, right? We're only 4 or 5 games into the season, depending on the team. But I believe there's like 10 or 11 teams across the NBA now that are averaging over 43.
And remember his first year, he had that quote that the most important stat in the NBA is 3-point attempts.
Yeah.
And even I was like, well,
I was like, is that right? Is that real?
And here's the thing. I think this is actually, and I'm not disagreeing with the caller that he's a great coach, and I think they're going to win a championship again this year. I think they're only going to lose 11 more games this season, okay? But I think this is as much a Brad Stevens thing as anything else. And the reason say that, when Brad took over, and this is way back in 2013, yours truly was actually interning for the Celtics at the time.
Ooh, look at you.
Yeah, fun
flex.
But the reason I do that subtle flex is I remember being at practice And I'm like, wow, all these guys are working on shooting threes. And that was right when the Warriors were starting to be good. And then some of those Isaiah Thomas, remember the Bridgie Celtic?
Yep.
Like Jay Crowder started shooting a bunch of threes.
Yeah.
Like Kelly Olynyk was shooting threes. So I think that's something that came, it started with Brad Stevens. And I'm sure Missoula, maybe their philosophies aligned anyway. But Missoula, remember, he was Brad's guy.
Yes,
the one guy Brad made Ime keep on the coaching staff that he's like, I want that guy around. He's the second row guy that Brad promoted to be head coach. So I think that's where their philosophies align. I think it started with Brad, and I think Missoula refined it because I will say with Missoula's offense, first of all, there are more threes than Brad's. It feels like the ball movement's a little bit better,
way
too,
better.
And a little bit more constant. And look, part of that is they're better.
Like, yeah.
It's easy to move the ball when you have Tatum and Brown, you're better. But it just feels like that's more of an emphasis, too, is spreading the ball
well,
up.
Well, and
more.
It makes sense, too, that Brad,
when we talk about ball movement, you're talking about the movement of the ball.
Thank you. Excellent job, Glenn. And it's interesting you point out that it started with Stevens, and I think that's one of the reasons why this team is so well built is because Brad envisioned what Joe wanted to run because it was what Brad had thought about running in the first place. And so he was able to go out and identify guys that would fit great in that system. Guys like Derek White, guys like Drew Holiday, bringing back Al Horford, acquiring Kristaps Porzingis, and then kind of just implementing all of those things, and then Joe Mazzulla really taking it to the mat.
And I think if you look at over the last 3 years, whether it was Udoka's only year or the first two Mazzulla years, when the Celtics have been at their best, they've been doing two things. Playing great defense and hitting threes.
Yeah.
Like, and they've been doing
last
other stuff,
night's defense,
too.
Not great.
Not ideal. Yes.
Not perfect.
And look, they do other things well, too, of course. I get it. I mentioned the Tatum rebound numbers earlier, all that. But those two things are the foundation. You look at when they went to the finals in 22. They were a 500 team in January. They go on a run because they were the best defensive team in the league the second half of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Then they go to the finals. They're hitting threes, too. Last year, they're obviously the best three-point shooting team in the league, best offense in the league. But they played really good defense, especially in the postseason. They locked teams down. I mean, that was a side note, this is a Dallas offense with Luka and Kyrie, and there were plenty of times, multiple games under, what was it, three games under 100 points? I don't have the scores in front of me, but I think it was three games under 100 points, maybe four. Like, that's their foundation. And they didn't play good defense last night. They didn't shoot the three ball well. It's a one-off. I get it.
And yet they still lost an OT.
I know.
That's how talented
they
exactly.
are. And I expect going in, I kind of feel bad for Charlotte because I expect going into this weekend.
Oh, they're going to unload.
And it's funny because before, if you asked me a Monday, when I was Tuesday night, when I was on with KJ, I said, you know, I think they're going to beat the Pacers and their first loss will be one of those Charlotte games because they'll win one of them by 30 and the other one they'll rest guys and drop. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, no, now they're going to.
Yeah. They're going to run it up.
They're going to go nuts. But the other team that plays at the TD Garden, Shime, a lot of problems. With the
it's Halloween.
Bears.
Lions.
I'm scared of them in a bad way.
There's some ghosts in the building.
There are some ghosts in the building.
Maybe some ghouls.
The Bruins do drop the puck tonight in Carolina. We're going to, coming up next, Scoops Keefe had an interesting report relating
My
to the
Scoops.
Bruins. We're going to get to that, talk about where they're at, not just before tonight's game, but at a kind of tricky place as we get into the season. Now, they're not in a great spot. We're going to get to all that coming up next.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I got word that this is legitimate
Jim Montgomery is on the hot seat. The hot seat. It sounds like the top of the front office is very, very frustrated with how the first 10 games of the season have gone. And somebody needs to be held accountable for that. Now, I don't know what turning it around means. I don't know if that means win 5 in a row or win 4 out of 5 or whatever. But it sounds like if things don't get better, Jim Montgomery is going to be the one that pays for it.
Okay. That was Rich Keefe earlier today on the Jones and Keefe program here on WEEI. Talking about Bruins coach Jim Montgomery, who in his third season with the team, last year of his contract, has the Bruins out to a 4-5-1 start. There's significant switches on the lines. Just this came out a few minutes ago. Marchand, Lindholm, Kastelic on the first line. Beecher, Zaka, Pasternak, second line. What stood out to me, Scheimann, this was in their practice lines yesterday, Charlie Coyle, fourth line center.
Wild.
Going into this game.
Well, I mean, he has 1 point on the season. He has been almost invisible at times. And the only reason Zaka is still playing with Pasternak is because Pasternak likes him and wants him there. That's the only reason Zaka's playing there, because Zaka has not been good either.
Yeah, it's almost, and not to be unkind, but it's like you kind of ask yourself the rhetorical question, like, has Zaka and Coyle, have they been playing this year?
Yeah.
Because it's almost they feel like they're invisible. Not there. Yeah, they feel invisible out there. No, and these are two guys the Bruins invested a lot of money in.
And have helped them a ton. Like, Coyle has been really good at points, especially on the PK. Like, he is so good on the PK. But it has been... this is also a guy that was like a first-line center for you for a large portion of time.
When Krejci missed games over the last couple of years, he was the guy they would put in Krejci's spot, and they'd feel fine about it.
Yeah, and I feel like you'll see him make more of an impact actually on the fourth line. That's just kind of the way he is. Like when he was able to be the third line centerman, he dominated. He was so good. He was just built for it. Like, it was just a great matchup for him. He's so good at puck possession. He's so strong and so big. And that's kind of where he thrived. And so being not on the top two lines might actually help him a lot tonight.
Yeah, we'll see from there. And Coyle's a guy, too, that I think when the Bruins have been at their best, he was the third-line center.
Yep, like, agreed.
Again, now he's dropped down to the fourth
Milbury
line.
Has always said, he's like, I love Charlie Coyle when he plays the third-line center.
It's kind of funny. He's like, to me, an elite third-line center. Mm-hmm. But then as soon as he goes up to your second line, he's like,
he's just
average.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like average. But then you put him in the right, so he's elite. So Keefe says Montgomery's on the hot seat. I mean, this is a Bruins team that, with Cam Neely and Don Sweeney, have invested a lot of draft picks and trades and money over the past 3 or 4 years. And you fire Bruce Cassidy, he immediately goes and wins the Cup with Vegas. You have the biggest playoff disappointment, arguably, in NHL history the same year. Last year, you advance, I think, further than a lot of people felt you could, but you still lose in the second round. You come out this year supposedly built to be better against Florida. You're worse against Florida. Mm. Now you're 4-5-1. I mean, you're a Bruins guy. I'm a Bruins guy. Is this a Montgomery problem right now?
So I say no. I think that this is I think they're in a really weird spot. So Montgomery, the last two seasons with the Boston Bruins, he started in that great regular season, 9-1 to start the season. The second season, 9-0-1, even better than the first season. And so this year, 4-5-1 was a real shift. Like, it's very different, but I also think that the personnel is entirely different than what he's been dealing with the last 2 years. And so I think, and we had Mike Milbury on this morning here on a Bruins Thursday on WEEI, and he even said, like, it feels like they don't know their identity. And Jim Montgomery is trying to fix his identity to match the team's.
A giant fart.
Yeah, and so they're at this weird point right now where nobody kind of knows what they are. And so they are struggling to succeed because they just haven't figured things out. And that's why you're seeing Montgomery stick his lines in a blender and all these things. And so for me, it's not a Montgomery issue. It's a personnel issue, right? Montgomery has been 2 years with the Bruins, a remarkable regular season coach, to say the least.
Like, I thought he got out-coached in that Florida series 2 years ago.
Sure, in the playoffs.
But as a regular season guy, you're right.
He's the best coach in hockey in the regular season.
I think mid-November last year, they were like 14-1-3, like something crazy. And by the way, you know, today's Halloween. You know what's 4 weeks from today?
Thanksgiving.
And so that's the playoffs at Thanksgiving. Like, so if they're worried he's not the guy, and I hate saying people should lose their jobs, but if they're worried that he's not the guy, it's kind of got to be sooner than later. You don't want to get to Thanksgiving and be like, well, we still don't know about Montgomery, and they're out of the playoffs then.
So it's really interesting, too, when you listen to Keith's scoop. I originally thought when he was saying upper management, he was speaking about Cam Neely, which made sense to me. I thought Cam Neely would be frustrated with this. And I think his anger or his frustration may be directed more towards Don Sweeney than it would be towards Jim Montgomery. But then when I hear him continue and be like, and Jones insinuate that it's actually ownership, and Keith kind of agree with him, I'm like, oh, maybe this is directed at Jim Montgomery, which I think is unfair. Like, I think it should be directed at Don Sweeney. Don Sweeney is the one that's bringing in the personnel. Jim Montgomery has done nothing but exceed with flying colors, or succeed with flying colors in the regular season. 2 years, he's been the best regular season coach in hockey. The playoffs, I get it. Disappointing. I totally get that. But we're not even close to the playoffs. We're 10 games into the season, and you're thinking about firing the guy who has been remarkable to this point in the regular season? So that, to me, feels overreactionary.
The thing with Sweeney, though, is how much more can he do? He loaded up that historic regular season team. He brought in two of arguably the biggest free agents in the class. They finally worked out the Jeremy Swayman issue.
Yeah, but you brought in two of the biggest free agents in the class, quote-unquote, but the guy who was supposed to be your first-line centerman like can't play with Pastrnak? But then, maybe that's something you should have identified before signing him to this contract, but then, because they're not working. Well, like, whatever it is between the two of them aren't gelling, and you can't just stick Lindholm between a Marchand who's coming off of three surgeries and might be washed, and Justin Brazo. Yeah.
But where does the responsibility, and I'm not the first person to say this, but where does the responsibility lie with the players? I mean, we just talked about Charlie Coyle. That's a big contract. Yeah. That's a guy that's been a good player on a Stanley Cup run for you. 1 point, right? You mentioned Lindholm not playing with Pastrnak. At some point, isn't it their responsibility too?
I don't disagree, but you can't just get rid of players. That's the issue.
Pastrnak's your highest paid player. Lindholm is one of your highest paid guys and the biggest free agent you've probably brought in the last 3, 4, 5 years, and they can't play together. Like, and Marchand's your captain. He's had surgeries. Fine. I get it. Zadorov, another big free agent, struggling to be on the third defensive pairing. I mean, how much money is Charlie Coyle and Brandon Carlo combining for? Are they making a huge impact?
You even look at Hampus Lindholm. Right. He, outside of that first season with this team, he has been not great.
Another guy who in that playoff loss to Florida in the historic season, he was bad in that series.
Awful.
And he's not been any real better since that. I mean, I know he had that great pass to Pastrnak against Toronto in Game 7. Outside of that, has he had a lot of good moments with the Bruins in the last 2 years? So, like, I get it. And if I'm ownership, I'm pissed because I look at it and say, we spend money to the salary cap almost every single year. We empower Don Sweeney. We empower Jim Montgomery. We empower these players. And over the last 15 years, you've made the Cup 3 times. 2 of them ended in disappointing losses. You've had multiple seasons where you've underachieved. You had a historic regular season where you lost in the first round. Like, at some point, you fired Chiarelli. You fired Claude Julien. You fired Bruce Cassidy. Now you're going to maybe fire Montgomery. Like, is there a point that you got to look these players in the eye and say they need more out of them? And maybe to your point, Don Sweeney's culpable in that too because he's putting the roster together. But he did put a roster together 2 years ago that won more games than any other team in the history of the league in a regular season.
Well, and so that's a thing that you have to realize too, I think, here is that the players are not easily movable. Like, no, it's all fully guaranteed contracts, especially these long contracts are going to be, you can't just be like, oh, man, this isn't working. Let's swap some guys. Let's cut them. Whereas you can do that with the coach and the GM. And so for me, the number one guy on the list right now shouldn't be Jim Montgomery. It should be Don Sweeney. Like, that's the guy who is assembling these units. That is the guy who's putting these players who aren't gelling, who aren't playing up to their contracts on the ice. And, oh, by the way, he's the one giving them the contracts. He should be the one that has the bullseye on him, the red dot sight on him, and not Jim Montgomery. Like, again, Montgomery has done nothing but be excellent in the regular season until now, randomly.
And
now.
I wonder, though, is this, because let's go back to when he was hired, right? That historic regular season. This is a pretty different team from then. Is this a team that is maybe he not fit to coach? And when I say fit, like, not competent-wise, but just his style. Because he was hired. Look, Bruce Cassidy was Mr. Mean. Of course, he goes and wins a cup. But Jake DeBrus didn't want him there. David Krejci.
Yeah, Jim Montgomery's Mr. Rogers.
Right, right. David Krejci wouldn't have come back if Cassidy was still here. So, is he was for that veteran team that was a loaded team with Bergeron and strong leadership. That, you know, you just kind of. I don't want to be crass, but you just kind of put the puck out there, get the lines right, and get out of the way. Now You got a different mix. You got some younger guys at key spots. Maybe you have to manage things a little bit differently. You're not as heavy firepower offensively. And maybe he's just not getting that combination right.
Well, so to me, it doesn't look like that. It looks more like the team itself doesn't have an identity. And so because they've shifted, right? They were this team that was highly skilled, highly puck possession, moving. You take quality shots, not quantity of shots. And they've started to shift to a more physical game, or they're trying to. You get guys like Zadorov in here. You get the Kastelics and the Max Joneses.
Beecher has a big role.
Beecher, those guys. Like, those guys, they want to bang some bodies. They want to hit people. They want to be tough. They want to be the big, bad Bruins again. But unfortunately, I don't think a guy like Pastrnak fits in the big, bad Bruins.
And can I say something about that, too? Like, big, bad Bruins, they went 39 years without winning a cup.
Yeah.
Is that really what you want to emulate?
No, you want to be the skill team. I mean, like, you want to be 20 in hockey. Look at Colorado. Colorado's been awesome for years because they're like the most talented team. The Oilers, they don't bang. Instead, they score a million goals.
And if you look at like the Panthers, they have the ideal mix, right? They're talented, but they're tough. Look at the one Bruins team in the last 50 freaking years that's won a cup, 2011. They had Chara, Seidenberg, McQuaid, Tim Thomas. They had really tough guys, Sean Thornton. But they also had a really skilled Marchand, Bergeron, Michael Ryder, who was really skilled. They had
Krejci was all skilled.
Krejci was unreal. Then, and they had Lucic, who was tough, but at that point also skilled early in his career.
Nathan Horton.
Yeah. So they had guys that were tough, but they also had a good mix of skill guys. I'd put the 2013 team, I know they lost, but similar roster. I'd put them in that mix. Sagan had a little bit of a bigger
Even
role.
Even that 2019 team. Like,
but that team, when it came to nut-cutting time, got pushed around against the Blues.
By a very physical team.
They didn't. So they were, to me, that's when it started to go too far. And they started to go too much towards the skill end. And we saw it, like the Lightning beat up on them, the Blues beat up on them, the Islanders a couple years ago, of course, Florida. Now I worry, are they trying to go too far to the tough end? Like, you have
they
to.
They might be.
Like,
they need to find a balance.
It sounds cliche, but the good teams, you mentioned the Oilers, you're right, they don't bang around everywhere, but they have some tough dudes. McDavid's a big dude. Florida obviously is the better example, but those good Lightning teams.
I think that's the great point there, right? Like, the Lightning that go to the Cup 3 years in a row, they have unbelievable skill,
Kucherov, like Stamkos
and Kucherov, but then they also have huge tough guys. Like, they have the Hedmans of the world. They have an awesome goalie, but there's toughness and skill
who's
involved.
Who's the McDonough from the Rangers they traded
Ryan
for?
Ryan McDonough,
tough,
yep.
Tough player. Yeah, like Braden Point led their team in points playoffs, and he was a tough guy, but then he could also score. Like, he was, I guess, if you want to say they're Lucic Horton type guy, but that's what they need to get to. And I look at this team and I'm like, okay, Zadorov's big, Coyle's big, these guys, Carlo's big, Pastrnak's really skilled, but is there anybody besides Pastrnak that I'm like, oh, he's going to go out and get goals for
no.
you?
No.
And that's kind of the concern.
There's not enough skill now. Like, it's like you went so far the other direction. It's like, dude, what do we do? And for a guy like Montgomery, I don't think fits with a, like, big, bad Bruin style. That's just not what he wants to do. Again, he wants to play puck possession, quality of shots, not quantity of shots. But when you're big and tough, you just want to take shots for shot's sake and get the puck in front of the net and be the tougher team and stuff it in. Like, that's kind of where you want to live. That, I don't think that's what Montgomery's strength is, which is why this giant shift is so weird and so, like, uncomfortable.
Yeah, I agree. We've got about a half hour here on the Night Show with Lions and Shine taking you to Thursday Night Football. We are going to talk a little bit more Patriots, but first, the World Series ended last night, and if you're a Red Sox fan, you might have a little bit of a broken heart today. I'll tell you why coming up next.
They don't bang.
Reliever to Mookie Betts. Deep center field. Judge retreats. He'll make the grab, but the Dodgers have come all the way back and taken the lead in game five. From down 5-0 to ahead 7-6 in the most preposterous way.
Back here on WEEI, John Lyons alongside Chris Schein, Joe Braverman behind the glass. Man, I wish we could get players like that on our baseball team.
Cool. If only, Lyons. If only we were that lucky.
So, Schein, I'm watching this World Series game last night, and two things stand out to me. First of all, an astonishingly bad level of baseball from the New York Yankees.
Ah, it makes me very happy.
It was great. Like, they're up 5-0, and Judge drops the easy fly ball. Volpe has the throwing error. Then Gerrit Cole inexplicably to me, and I know many people have said this already, but inexplicably, just doesn't cover first base on the Mookie Betts ground ball. Then Teoscar Hernandez, of course, you know, follows it up. You know, they get hits. You know, Freddie Freeman follows it up. Hernandez follows
it
up.
He raked, by the way.
He's got two iconic images now, Cole. The four when he rocked, walked Rafi Devers, yeah. And then the pointing over at first base on Rizzo. Go cover!
Like, an astonishingly bad level of baseball from the New York Yankees. I mean, they're 5-0 in the fifth with Gerrit Cole on the mound. And they end up losing the game 7-6. And a shout-out, by the way, I know we're going to talk about Mookie Betts. Dave Roberts, a World Series champion once again, 20th anniversary of the 04 Red Sox, his second championship as Dodgers manager. Thought Dave Roberts made one of the toughest calls of the night, leaving Blake Treinen in 42 pitches throughout the 7th and 8th inning. I was a little worried he was having a Grady Little moment there when he left him in. I was like, oh, no, Dave, no. But it worked. He got the strikeout, and of course, final out of the game for the Yankees was one and only Alex Verdugo. Nice little strikeout.
That makes you feel better.
So the reason I want to bring this up, first of all, I just like the World Series. I find it interesting every year. But there's some real Red Sox pieces to this because Juan Soto is now a free agent who the Red Sox should pursue.
They won't, but he should.
According to John Heyman earlier this evening, they are going to, quote, check in on Juan Soto.
Yeah, I bet they are.
I don't know what that means.
Are you going to give him a call and be like, hey, Juan, how much are you looking for? Oh, $500 million? Yeah. Okay. Nice talking to you. Have a good one.
Yeah, I don't know. But like, what is a check? Like, is a check-in? Like, if I walked down to Ken's office and said, hey, by the way, can I just like be the lead host on the morning, midday, and afternoon show? Like, is that a check-in?
Yeah, like, I think so.
Yeah, that counts, right? So I'm not coming for Greg Hill. Don't worry. But
that's okay.
Yeah, I don't think he has to worry about me. But point is, they're going to check in on him. And then you have the Dodgers, this team that, and I know some people around here hate the Dodgers. Of course, we all hate the Yankees more. But everything the Dodgers have done to build their team over the last 5 years is exactly what the Red Sox should do. They have homegrown players.
Should do.
Look who closed out the World Series last night. Homegrown guy.
Yep.
They have homegrown players. They have other guys like Tyler Glasnow and Mookie Betts, who they use prospects to trade for. And they have big Freddie Freeman, free agent signing.
Awesome.
Otani, free agent signing, right? Yamamoto, who won game two? Free agent signing. So they have big free agent signings. They have guys that they've homegrown, and they have guys that they use some homegrown prospects to trade for. This is what the Red Sox should be doing. And for 5 years, they've only been doing one thing, which was the prospect piece. And I wonder, does seeing the Dodgers and especially the Yankees in the World Series, but seeing Mookie Betts be a big part of it, does that maybe finally wake them up to, hey, we got to do the other two parts of this?
Not really. I mean, Mookie Betts won a World Series with the Dodgers, what, 2020?
Yeah, 2020.
And they didn't react to that. Like, I don't think the Mookie Betts portion of it they care about quite as much. It is extremely bothersome that Mookie Betts is winning titles with the Dodgers and will probably retire a Dodger and go to the Hall of Fame as a Dodger. That bugs the crap out of me. But I don't think it irks them quite the way it irks me. If the Yankees had won the World Series, maybe they would have overreacted a little bit. But because they lost, I just don't think they will. I want to say, I think Jones and Keefe were talking about it this afternoon, actually, that Alex Spear had done like one of those like Reddit AMAs and said that the Red Sox were definitely considering giving someone like a $100 million contract, which is nothing.
What
you're going to need to give someone like a $400 million contract,
you know what
$100
million is?
Trevor Story.
It's Trevor Story.
Or like, Lucas Giolito.
Like, what is that?
It's nothing. Like, it is not. That's my point. It's nothing.
It's a
that's
second
where their
starter.
Heads are.
Yeah.
They don't want to spend money, like actual physical money.
And this Mookie trade, and you might be right that they don't care about it as much as you and I and others do. That literally
they should
might be the worst trade in the history of Boston sports
since Babe Ruth.
Like, and I don't want to put Mookie right on Babe Ruth's level, but
he
2020 playoffs, he hit .290.
Yep.
They won a World Series. What did he hit these playoffs? .290, four homers, 16 RBIs, .951 OPS for the playoffs. It was over .1100 in the NLCS. And this isn't new. He's been a top five position player in baseball since 2018. Won the MVP in 2018. Yep. Top five position player.
And he's been in the MVP like voting.
Even before that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so this is a guy, at least for 6 years, is a top five position player. You let him go.
And a gold glover.
For basically nothing. Because I know Verdugo had some good moments in 2021.
Ugh.
He just struck out to end the World Series.
Oh, no, you get Connor Wong, though.
Yeah. Great. Connor Wong. And Connor you
Wong.
Got Dick Fitz for Verdugo, too.
Oh, yeah.
But
great trades.
Yeah. It, like, That is staring you in the face
yep.
as an all-time bad transaction. And there's only one way you're ever going to get past it, and it's to win the World Series again.
Oh, and like, by the way, then you paid Devers more than what Mookie Betts is making, and who would you rather have, Lyons?
I'd rather have Betts. I'd rather have Bogaerts.
Oh, shocker. Yeah. I'd rather have the Gold Glove fielder who
six-time
also
Six-time silver slugger. A guy who, by the way, leader. And like Devers is a guy. Devers is a great complimentary piece.
Awesome.
He's not a leader. Mookie Betts is a real leader. And like the Mookie Betts trade was worse than letting Tom Brady go. Because Brady won a Super Bowl.
All right. That maybe not quite that much.
Hear me out. Brady won a Super Bowl, and it was bad. Greatest quarterback of all time.
Yeah.
He was 42 when he left and played three more years. Betts has already played, what, five seasons since he's left? He's already won two championships to Brady's one. He's got another 10 years to go on the best team in baseball. Like, he could end up winning four championships, and you got nothing. Because, look, you got nothing when Brady left. If you want to count Connor Wong, fine. But you got basically nothing for that guy. I mean, I think it's going to go down as worse than Tom Brady leaving.
What a core the Dodgers have, though, too, between Betts, Freeman, Ohtani, Yamamoto, and Walker Buehler. Like, it's just like they're going to be contending for titles every year. Remember at the beginning of the year, too, when people were like, oh, yeah, you got to sign Alex Cora because he might go to the Dodgers. Dave Roberts might lose his job. Next thing you know, he's a World Series champion. Yeah,
he's safe for a few more years.
Yeah, I would say
and
so.
And you look at some of, like, the Phillies, the Dodgers, and I'd put the Padres there, too. Those are probably the three best teams in baseball. And if you want to throw the Mets there, too. What do they do that the Red Sox don't? They spend more money.
Yeah.
I mean, all those teams, and I would include the Red Sox, they all have had success drafting. Padres, Phillies, and Dodgers, and Red Sox. They've all drafted well. They all have some good prospects. I think they all have good managers. But three of them spend, and one doesn't.
Like, you won't even spend to the point where you keep a guy like Kyle Schwarber in the building.
Nuts.
Like, that's insane.
Left here and led the NL in homers in 22.
Like, it's not. Yeah, I think he's over the last two seasons in the top five in home runs. Like, it's insane. And yet you won't even pay a guy like that. It's not even that's not a $300 million player either. That is your
$100 million player.
Like, you could have just kept Kyle Schwarber, and it's like, oh, that's a good bat to have in the lineup. Yeah. No, we're just going to let him walk for nothing. It's fine.
And I think the Red Sox, from a fan base perspective, there's a lot of negativity and apathy toward the Red Sox, and it's warranted.
Oh, yeah.
Warranted. And look, we're on the Red Sox radio network. We hear it all the time. There's a lot of frustration. The Red Sox, I think, from the perspective of the fan base, are really on notice right now because
they're Jim Montgomery.
On
the hot seat.
On the hot seat. Because
he's on the hotter seat.
Look, if you look at all the great pitchers that were available last offseason, Red Sox got none of them.
What was
their biggest flaw this year?
Pitching.
Their rotation. Look at who's available this offseason. I mentioned Juan Soto. Well, so is Corbin Burns, right? Willy Adames. There's a lot of great. If you get none of those guys, really, you should get two. But if you get none of those guys, and then the Celtics are going to be playing through June, the Patriots will be better next year, you would assume, Drake May's second year. Where's the fan interest level going to be in the Red Sox?
Oh.
There's already apathy and frustration. And now if you tell me you're going to bookend the Red Sox season with the Celtics going to June and the Patriots with renewed interest, and I'm not telling you they're going to be great next year, but with renewed interest and a second-year franchise QB, what are they going to have, 2 weeks in July? People care? Maybe that will hit home for them. If not the Mookie thing, because you might be right about the Mookie thing, but maybe that will hit home.
Maybe, but like I don't know that they care, and it's sad. Like it's just I think
it's
they might
thing
be
in the portfolio.
Yeah, they might be invested in other things and in things like the Penguins and things like Arsenal and you know just or Liverpool. I think they own
don't
not
buy,
Arsenal.
Don't buy the Celtics.
Yeah, please don't
let Pags or Bezos do that.
Somebody, anybody. But it's just like it's frustrating, man. Like it just and they're more worried about trying to get an NBA team in Vegas than they are spending money for the Boston Red Sox.
And side note on that: if let's say the Celtics sell for $6 billion. What do you think the expansion fee in Vegas is going to be? And
10?
If they want to be part of that, like that, where's that money coming from?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the thing. And that's why, like, I see this. Well, they're going to check in on Juan Soto.
Yeah, they're not going to pay. They're going to give him a call and be like, hey, Juan, what did you want? You want to take a discount? No? Yeah. Oh, I don't have a discount code for that? Sorry.
Juan Soto is going to cost double Mookie Betts. Like, seriously. So if you didn't want to sign Mookie, you didn't want to sign
Bogaerts.
They're
not going to sign Soto.
Like, he's going to cost, and frankly, 26 years old, probably going to be worth it. Okay, but he's going to cost double what Mookie Betts is going to cost, and that's right to me. I mean, the only saving grace that I can hope for, Shyam, Theo Epstein's back in the fold. If there's one guy, and I don't even know if it would work, But if there is one guy on the planet Earth that can go to John Henry and Tom Warner and say, you got to knock this off and you got to actually spend more money, he's the guy.
Yeah, but I don't even think, for the way they make it sound, I don't think that he is that involved with the baseball ops. Like, it's just the way they make it sound, he's a part of Fenway Sports Group. So he's probably also more interested in that NBA expansion team than he is worried about the Boston Red Sox having success.
Yeah, I think it's something that, again, I'm just worried about. There's already a lot of apathy, a lot of frustration. Is that going to continue? If they don't do anything this winter, is that going to continue? Before, we are going to get to the Patriots in a few minutes, but I do want to go to, we have David in the car. He wants to talk some Red Sox. David, what do you got for us?
Yeah, you know what? I just wanted to say with the Red Sox, not only did they import Tampa Bay's business model and the way they do business, but they're about to import the way Tampa Bay's attendance goes, because that Tampa Bay model just does not bring fans into the stage. And if they don't wake up and realize, they're about to, like, just kill the Red Sox, which is just amazing for anybody who's grown up in this area.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate
especially
it.
Like with the 04 documentary coming out on Netflix, it's like you look back and how
look just, at that team. Look at the talent on that. Look at the money invested in that team.
And so and not even just the money invested, but how much attention that team had from John Henry, right? He was so focused and so intent on winning with
the
that
Patriots
team.
Were the defending Super Bowl champs, and the Red Sox are the bigger story.
Yes.
That's what we're talking about. Like, that's where, and maybe look,
the Patriots weren't just defending Super Bowl champions. They were a dynasty.
They were on their way, right, to back-to-back. And the Red Sox are the bigger story throughout the 04 calendar year, we'll say. And maybe 20 years later, it'll never get to that level again. But where they're at, man, is...
It is the complete opposite of that. Yeah. Now. They were at complete and utter, like, peak of interest. And now they're almost at, like, a total apathy.
I mean, we work at the station. We talk to fans all the time. At best, they're the third team, interest-wise. Because I think sometimes they're above the Bruins. And a lot of times, though, it's... out of anger and negativity.
And I think that's also just the relationship between baseball and hockey.
Sure.
But, like, when it comes to, like, the Patriots and Celtics' interest blow the Red Sox out of the water right now. Yeah. And in large part, it's because the Red Sox are just so bad. It's like you're always going to get people to come to Fenway because it's a historical park, it's a fun little outing, blah, blah, blah. Even if it is, like, stupid expensive, people will still go. Yeah. And so that, I guess they have that going for them. But when it comes to, like, actual fans who want to be diehards and want to care, it's becoming extremely difficult.
And they've heard all of the noise and the words. Like, remember in the end of season press conference with Kennedy, Breslow, and Cora, they were adamant, like, it's over, it's over. But I still talk to people who are like, let's actually see a move first before we actually get excited.
Sam Kennedy called people liars if
Chris
they
Curtis,
thought they
right?
did, that you, yeah, called Chris Curtis a liar if you thought that they didn't care about the team. Well, from the outside looking in, it doesn't look like you care all that much,
brother.
Yeah,
and it's one thing to say, I care. That's a lot different than we're going to go after it.
You're wrong. You're a liar.
Yeah, like, oh, I don't know, man.
It's
just
frustrating.
That singular moment is why they're getting rid of Winter Weekend.
And I just, like, I watched...
thanks a lot, Curtis.
I watched the MLB playoff.
It's all Curtis.
Yeah, it's nothing to do with the huge booing of High and Blue 2 years ago.
Nope, blame Curtis.
Like, and it's just, I watched the MLB playoffs, and it's like, I see Bogarts on a Padres team that's great. You know, I see Dombrowski leading a Phillies team that's great. I see Mookie on a Dodgers team that wins the World Series. I'm like, and Schwarber, like, you could have these guys.
You could have all those guys.
You had them.
Yeah, you did.
And it's just, oh. But let you know what, Chime? We got a few minutes left here. Let's talk about something a little
Pivot.
More happy. A little better. I got to for a few minutes.
Yeah, we got to get this.
We started the show talking Patriots. Of course, the big story is Drake May and whether or not he's going to play where he's at. You and I seem to agree he's trending towards playing, and I think this is the most winnable game on the Patriots schedule, despite them already having won two games.
Yep.
I think it's the most winnable game, and I think it's the best chance May has had so far, and maybe will have all year, to have a huge game and to get himself a legitimate full four-quarter convincing win.
Yeah, 100% it is. And it's an opportunity not just for him to get his full four-quarter win, but to kind of pop off in the process. And this is kind of what I had hoped for last week, and I felt like we're on the way to getting it. I wanted to see a game where, okay, if Drake May is the guy, which a lot of us, I especially, but a lot of us believe he is, it's like that guy eventually has to go and like win you a game by himself.
Go take it.
Yeah, go take that, a game,
that's
steal
the,
a game.
That's the phrase I use. Like, you look at the good quarterbacks, every now and then, they go take it.
They just go, they go take a game because they're that good. And so I felt like Sunday was going to be that moment for Drake. And unfortunately, he goes out with the injury. And so I'm like, all right, here we go. Now I got to wait for another one. But, okay. Tennessee's coming knocking. All right, if he goes out to Tennessee and he is playing, like, this is another opportunity for him to be like, don't worry, guys, I'm just better than them. Let's just go win this. And it is the perfect opportunity to start building that confidence.
And I think this Tennessee defense is a little bit of a paper tiger because they have some injuries, like Jerry Sneed's on the injury report, but they're number one in the NFL in yards per game, number one in passing yards per game, but 21st in passer rating. They've only got 76 pressures on the year per PFF, which most teams are around 176, really low. So what that tells me, quarterbacks are operating really efficiently against them. Mm-hmm. Teams are getting leads and running the ball. And you made the great point earlier, they're also just getting put in a lot of short fields and then giving up points.
It's like the Patriots defense last year, right?
A ton
the
of
Patriots
short
defense was pretty good, but they were facing so many short fields that it didn't matter.
Yeah, like that first field goal against Buffalo last year, they forced a 3-and-out.
And they're just on the field for so long that it's like, the Patriots should dominate time of possession, and they should dominate at the line of scrimmage. Those are the two things I want to see the most out of this Patriots team, regardless of who's at quarterback, right? If Drake plays, like, Drake should be awesome, that's fine. But even if Jacoby Brissett plays in this game, you should be dominating time of possession, and you should be dominating at the line of scrimmage. I think that is imperative for this team going forward, especially to set that precedent.
And I feel like each week or every day we're looking at things, can Drake May build on? The word for me this week is efficiency, because I think you can be really efficient against that Tennessee defense.
Absolutely.
We got Thursday night football coming up, Jets and Texans. Shime, you had an off-air interesting point. Jets are favored in this game?
2.5-point favorites now in a lot of spots.
That's stupid.
Trust me, I agree. And sometimes Nick Kostos and I have talked about this on Friday mornings on the Greg Hill Show every Friday at 9:30. Kostos joins the program.
He'll be back tomorrow?
He will be back tomorrow. That is correct.
Ding!
Kostos and I have talked about this a couple times this year. Sometimes it's just the wrong team is favored. It's a WTF game. It's a, like, you go, what the? And then you're like, oh, wrong team favored. There it is. And I think that's the case here. People are overreacting to the fact that Stephon Diggs and Nico Collins won't play in this game. And they overreact to the fact that the Jets need to rebound after a loss to the Patriots. And so I think they are just assuming that short rest at home for the Jets, they're going to be the favorites. When in reality, this Texans defense is a total mismatch.
And just coming off the Jets game last week, I mean, this team's a mess.
They are a disaster. There is no team that the Jets should be favored over except for the Carolina Panthers and the Tennessee Titans. That's it. And maybe the Patriots. That's about it.
You got any bets tonight before we go?
Yeah, I'm all over the Texans. Texans plus 2.5, Texas money line. Just give it to me all over the place. But I also love Joe Mixon tonight. Anytime touchdown, 80-plus yards. And Garrett Wilson to have a nice night for the Jets.
All right, as Shime said, give it
any
to them all
game
over
score
the place.
From the two of you? You guys want to make a prediction?
Texans 27, Jets 17.
Yeah, I'm just going to echo that. Yeah, that works. All right, that is it for an abbreviated night show. That was Joe Braverman behind the glass. Great job as always. Chris Shime, always a pleasure.
Always fun, Lions.
As of now, we're scheduled to be back together Black Friday morning.
Ooh.
Can't wait for that. Of course, I will be back tomorrow night with KJ Carson. You will be back tomorrow morning with the Greg Hill Show.
Yes, sir.
Until then, enjoy Thursday night football.
See ya.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.